Hello, this is 103.2 Dublin City FM. You're listening to Ger Coonan, and today I'm talking to gambling addiction counsellor Brian Lynch.
The question that's asked usually at an interview is, what is problem gambling? And this explanation encapsulates exactly what it is and how it affects the person. An addictive process in which the subject is driven by an overwhelming, uncontrollable impulse to gamble. The impulse progresses in intensity and urgency, consuming more and more of the individual's time, energy, and emotional and material resources. Ultimately, it invades, undermines, and often destroys everything that is meaningful in his life. And I think that explanation encapsulates the way problem gambling affects the individual, just the individual, and obviously family members then after that, which we'll speak about later.
You've just heard Brian Lynch. Brian Lynch, who are you and what is your current project?
Brian, I'm an addiction counsellor with the IAAAC. I have offices in Ockram, County Wicklow and in Arklow. At present, I am completing my MSc, my Master's in Trinity College, under the heading, although it's drug and alcohol policies, I went through the powers that be and wanted to do my thesis on internet gambling, online gambling, and the problems that gambling have for individuals in Ireland. Admittedly, gambling is a pastime for a huge majority of people, but for a quickly increasing minority, it's really, really becoming problematic, and hence my interest and probably the media's interest in this area for the last while.
As an outsider, as somebody who thinks he doesn't have a problem with gambling, there can't be that many people. It's not worth, surely to God, setting up special organisations for the couple of problem gamblers we have in Ireland.
Well, there's not a couple. Like, you know, it's increasing rapidly. The UK changed their laws 8 years ago, and now they're only seeing the problems, the exacerbating problems that they're having over there now, with a huge increase in problem gambling. They liberalised the laws in 2005, and since then and now, because gambling problems are on the continuum, so you don't go from enjoying a gamble on Friday and then Saturday you have a problem. Like all addictions, they're on a continuum, so they get progressively worse till they get to the stage where you just can't stop. And that's why, so it does take a while for the research to show how problematic it's becoming. And it also depends, you know, people, we talk about 1 or 2% of the population, but that's down the chronic end of things. So really the question is where do you place the line from problem gambling? Problem gambling it encapsulates a whole area. So is it problematic that dad is never there on a Saturday, or dad isn't coming home from work, or, you know, to see the kids and talk? Is that problematic? Well, maybe. Is it problematic that Johnny can't go on a school tour because there's no money there for the school tour and stuff like that, or there's no shoes for work for school, or there's no uniforms for school that'll do them? Is that problematic? Yeah. Or are we down on the other end of the scale where mortgage isn't getting paid, where there's not enough food to go around, there's violence in the house? So it depends, you know, when you're talking about problem gambling, obviously the industry would like to leave it down around the 1 or 2% when it's really chronic. But look at the problems, because they're on a continuum, it depends where you place the line when problems start to come, you know, what sort of problems, how you know, I mean, you know, families, it's estimated that 10 to 15, depending on which research you look at, are affected by one problem gambler. Do you know what I mean? So that it's not just the individual, and it's not just the media family, it's work colleagues, you know, it's society. I mean, you look at courts, or we only have to open up a newspaper on a daily, whereas before, you know, you wouldn't hear about that at all. You'd very rarely hear about gambling problem, but every time you open the paper now, it's fraud or whatever like that, and you'll always see in the last paragraph, because of gambling problems. So, you know, so it's a societal problem. The government we're a long way behind the UK, but the government is starting to taste. The Department of Social Protection have just issued research for UCD to carry out around societal problems due to gambling. you know, the gambling control bill has areas in it where we're going to sort of, you know, the gambling industry is going to need, you know, so a corporate responsibility, you know, and they're going to have to look at how is it affecting different individuals. But this is all, we're only starting now, and we're probably, you know, 15, 20 years behind the UK. So we're really playing catch up. And while this research is getting done, you know, the problems are speeding up. So I don't, not sure whether the research or whether any sort of stuff we can put in place. So the genie is out of the bottle, basically, as far as gambling. And, you know, what we really need to do is we need to educate people that, look, it's not the fluffy pastime that the industry would like you to believe in. And as I say, it is for a lot of people. But we need to be aware of the problems that gambling can hold for individuals, you know.
For long ago, there was no gambling. And now all of a sudden there is gambling. Well, what, you know, how come the people in the past didn't gamble and now we are gambling?
Well, you know, that's a myth, like, as well, because gambling problems have been around since people started gambling. People have run into gambling problems, and the literature will show that, you know, like, gambling has been a problem for, I mean, the British Army has stopped gambling back centuries ago because of the problems. It was, you know, it's not documented as well with the media we have today, that the problem. So people have always run into problems with gambling. But what's happening is the prevalence, the ways to gamble are just, you know, 24/7 now with internet, with the book. I mean, at one stage, I mean, it used to be, you know, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, Saturday. But then the bookies closed at 5 o'clock. It was gone. That's it. You couldn't gamble anymore. Maybe it might go out to the dogs. But look, basically, more or less, you couldn't gamble, you know, anymore. And that was it. You know, that's restraint theory, that we're allowed, you know, you do what you're allowed to do, because then societal sort of situations won't allow you. Like, if people, you know, if people haven't got a bookies in their village, and then if they go through ringing and trying to go, you know, from years ago, they didn't gamble that much. And that'll show you. But availability to gamble has a huge impact on gambling problems. So with the internet and stuff like that, and as I say, it went to horse racing, just to use as an example, it went to evening racing, Sunday racing, it went to absolutely everything. So it's nearly across the board. I mean, during the summertime, I mean, if you're driving around at 9:30, you'll still see the lights on the book. You know, it's, you know, and there's people, individuals in there gambling till that hour. So, like, and then Sundays used to be sacrosanct in Ireland, but of course now there's gambling every Sunday, do you know. So it's available, it's the amount of gamble, the opportunities to gamble, which will show that there's lots more problems then coming down the line for people with the, sorry, go on.
Ah, no. And can I suggest, from my limited research, that the bookies are largely for the working class, and the maybe upmarket casinos are for, and online, are for the upper classes or the middle classes. If we admit that there might be a social class system in Ireland.
That is a crossover. You know, I mean, there's no getting away from the fact that gambling used to be the area for middle-aged men, you know, on a Saturday, and the bookies will be packed and stuff like that. They'll have their bet and that's it. And that's what gambling was. But now there's a thing called the digital divide. They talk about the digital divide. So people that are used to using online and stuff like that say, right, okay, this online gambling, I'm fairly adept at using the internet. But where they, what the problem is gambling is always a chance of luck. So being adept at using the internet doesn't travel into the arena of gambling, but that's where the gap is, and that's why people are finding themselves running into problems so quickly. So there is a whole new demographic of people using gambling, you know, gambling online, and you know, even you know, females, you know, the feminization of gambling is a study now in Australia, where, you know, there used to be, rightly or wrongly, a stigma for women going into the bookies and stuff like that. But now with online, you know, they can gamble, you know, without any stigma, and unfortunately, that what that happens then is one of the resources for people that run into problems with gambling, Gamblers Anonymous, there's still a stigma because it's male dominated. So it's they really haven't, females haven't really got the outlet to go there because of the stigma even going to a male dominated area of fellowship. So the feminization of gambling, and then also, and finally, another demographic is adolescents. I mean, adolescents are being drawn in, you know, the age verification on a lot of these sites, online sites, are at best vague, you know, and they can always be circumvented in any way, like, you know. So there's an awful lot of teenagers now looking for help because of the internet as well, like. So at least in land-based gambling, more traditional forms, if a person looks really young, there is the chance that they will be asked for age verification. But on the internet, because it's so anonymous, that's how we're going to run into problems. And I don't think we're ready for it.
There's a phrase I hadn't thought of before: the feminization of gambling. Well, there's an article by a Dr. Mark Griffiths in Psychology Today, which starts off bluntly with the following sentence: the worldwide deregulation of the gambling industry may not only pose a problem to some of the general population, but also to specific at-risk groups such as women. Women may be equally as susceptible to developing problem gambling as men, and research has indicated that although they tend to acquire the disorder later in life, progression is often much faster. There is a male bias, at least up to the present, in the literature about problematic gambling. In other words, it focuses on men. And men have been repeatedly found to prefer, if you like, strategic forms of gambling which necessitate a higher element of risk-taking and skills such as casino gambling or sports betting. However, this is in contrast to women, who, according to research, favour gambling activities that involve less monetary risk, such as slot machines and bingo. Although, in all of this, there are cultural differences. People are different in England and Ireland and China, for example. Such differences between the genders in gambling behaviour may in part reflect differences in motivations to gamble. In other words, why are you gambling in the first place? And I found it curious to see at the very beginning of this article that the writer said at-risk groups. So there must be groups who are not at risk. And what is an at-risk group? I'm assuming it's somebody who's vulnerable, somebody who has some sort of a problem. Research has documented that male gamblers find the thrill of gambling, wait for this, ego enhancement, communing, competitive risk taking, and asserting their masculinity to be important motivations for gambling. Whereas women, on the other hand, may be more motivated to gamble to escape from boredom and gain time out from family responsibilities. That's very interesting.
I could use the word psychological, mental, emotional. What's going on? Roughly speaking, everybody like you, like your good self, every expert will have a slightly different take on addiction. You already read out a definition. But stage one of addiction then is roughly, presumably, is the romantic stage, is it? Is the romance stage?
Well, a lot of the time people start off with gambling. Like, you know, a lot of the time people in Gamblers Anonymous, and certainly in my office, will say, oh, it was great at the start. I won at the start and stuff like that. And this is easy way to make money. And unfortunately, them initial beliefs are very hard to shake, because once you sort of say to yourself, yeah, this is an easy way of making money. Do you know what I mean? I'm working late here when I could easily back a dog race on the way home and I'd get more money without tax and stuff like that. So that becomes ingrained. When you have an early win, it sort of becomes ingrained in you. And then Even concentration, once you start gambling, it's exciting. Obviously, it's exciting. For non-problem gamblers, maybe going to Leopardstown at Christmas, it's an exciting time. But they like, you know, they're going after Christmas, come January, it's back to work and stuff like that. So they don't need to. Whereas with a gambler, it's really the cognitive element in gambling, because you're not ingesting a substance or anything like that. The cognition, so how we think, has a huge role to play. And a lot of these sort of irrational sort of thoughts that I'm lucky. I mean, just an example, people will come into my office and say, yeah, I'm fairly lucky at gambling. And yet they'll be in my office because of gambling problems. So what we need to do, and not in an aggressive sort of way, not in a banging the table sort of way, is to sort of challenge them irrational beliefs, them irrational cognitions, and bring them into conscious awareness and say, well, is that really true? And what we say to sort of colleagues of mine is, you know, when I'm trying to say that, we don't do it in an aggressive way, because that's counterproductive. People, anybody that's old enough, we say we can do it in a more Columbo way rather than Kojak banging the desk, if that makes sense. And that's what we try to do. Bring any irrational cognitions around luck, superstition, any sort of stuff, and saying, like, and say, well, let's have a look at that. Can we just have a look at that? Because it's really important for us to get the client to the stage where they can sort of say, yeah, that doesn't actually, it's not ringing true. And that's what motivational interviewing, what we try to do is try to bring the thoughts into conscious awareness, bring their own thoughts into conscious, for them to sort of have a look at it, trash it, and say, yes, does that make sense? Well, the evidence is contrary to what these thoughts are telling me. And let's have a look at that. Let's monitor them, and let's have a look in the office on a one-to-one level. And then what we do is, because, and finally, basically, the basic thoughts in layman's terms is what we think, we behave that way, and then that becomes our reality. So it's as simple as that, if we're looking at layman's terms. So our thought process leads us to behave in a certain way, and if we're behaving in a certain way, that becomes our reality. So you can see how that is in gambling. But the good news is, if we start thinking differently, so if we start opening up and sort of start challenging our irrational thoughts, our behavior slowly but surely begins to change, and then that becomes our reality also, if that makes sense.
I'm imagining that there aren't too many 70-year-olds gambling addicts, although with online, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but there is, you know what I mean. Gambling can affect, an individual at any time in their lives. You know what I mean. A lot of people, actually, when you're talking about 70-year-olds, a lot of people will run into gambling problems in retirement because they've more time. And time, the one thing about a gambling problem is it's an insatiable appetite for time. It needs time, and that's not just standing in the bookies, that's not just online, it's looking, it's researching, it's sort of speaking about it, but cognitively thinking about it the whole time. Jim offered to say, you know, it's a brilliant thing to have in our armory, to learn how to do something over and over and think about it, be it driving, we can drive, we learn how to drive consciously, but then we eventually can do it unconsciously. We can think about different things, long journeys, we won't even feel ourselves changing the gears, and that's a brilliant plus in evolution. But where it's not a brilliant plus is in addiction, when it comes to addiction, that we don't even think about. We find a bit, you'd often hear people saying in my office and in GA, I just found myself there. You know, I just found myself gambling. I just didn't think about it. I was just gambling away. So what we need to do as counsellors is to elongate that. So in other words, that people don't find themselves there. And that's how cognitions work in the thought process.
But I've bad news for you, because as human beings, we are social animals. And you'll correct me here, I hope. I've never been inside a bookies. I don't remember the last time I was in a bookies. But as human beings, we need other people. And I put it to you, how are you going to get somebody to give up gambling if most of it they do in a bookies? Because they go there, number one, nice cup of coffee, other people, human beings. And thirdly, you said the word yourself at some stage, it's a safe haven. It's a little harbour, little haven in there. So they've got... There's quite a few things reinforcing, if you want to call it, the gambling behaviour, habit.
Oh, yeah.
And they're nice things. Cup of coffee, people, chat.
You're right. You're right at a certain level. But what you'll find with most problem gamblers, and they'll admit, you know, usually when it comes to the stage where it becomes problematic, and if you... you haven't been in the bookies, unfortunately, I've spent a lot of time. You don't really, even though you're all there, you're like individuals, you don't really want to be disturbed. And even the chat you're talking about is only about the horses and stuff like that. So it's not really, it's people trying to get, you know, information, people trying to get, you know, what they think, what you think. It's not real social interaction.
It's not a pub.
No, it's not. And the pub can sometimes be the same as well. Do you know what I mean? That falseness, that sort of at a level, you know, people get it when you're talking about real stuff. And my job is to instill, and remember, I just would like to say at this stage that I went through years of problem gambling myself. And you know at a level, an intelligence level, that all that interaction in the bookies or in the pub at the bar and the jokes, and that's not real social interaction. You know, what we're talking about here is that falseness and stuff like that, and people talk about it when they come into recovery. That's not the real social interaction, you know. And that's the reason why online gambling is becoming so prevalent, because people like not to be disturbed. They just like to be in the trance, in the world. I mean, just the final example of that would be, if you went in, I'm from Dublin originally, if you went into Funland on O'Connell Street there, you'd have the sellers out on Moore Street, you know, coming around after spending hours in the freezing cold. Now, I'm going back a long time. And these three bars, two bars, one bar, and they'd have a tray full of money. Twopences, you know. So it was never about the finance. You're not going to win too much. And they'd say, oh, they all go around there for a bit. But there's no interaction. Everybody is in a trance with the machine. And if you were in the bookies, if you look at anybody, if you were looking at it through a CCTV, you'd look, everybody is in their individual trance. So there might be 20 people in the bookies, but every one of them are in a trance-like state. So that's social. I get what you're saying, Jared, but that social is sort of a myth. That's a sense of falseness. It's not real social interaction.
Gambling, even in a perverse way, could I not say to you that gambling requires skill?
You see, people, I hear what you're saying. People overestimate their abilities. You know, people would often come to me in my office and say, or, you know, if I'm giving a seminar, they would always throw up and say, well, there's 10 horses in the race. One of them has to win it, and it's up to me to pick it. So, you know what I mean? And this is actually the crux of the problem. Problem gamblers, all gamblers overall, non-problem gamblers can accept the likelihood of them picking the winner in 10 horse race is probably not great. Whereas problem gamblers sort of, they invest great kudos in the fact that they're very skillful. They're very knowledgeable and stuff like that. Well, you know, they overestimate their skill or their ability to pick that horse in the 10 race, you know. And sometimes that's like a blow to the ego when I say that, and I sort of have to say, when they're saying, well, someone has to win, and I have to say, well, you're after running into problems over the last few years, and you've huge financial problems, you've huge debt, you've huge emotional problems, relationship problems. Are we not at the stage now where maybe, just maybe, you've overestimated your ability and your skill in picking the winner? And usually that's not, doesn't go down to it, but if you see the realization in the client's face, that's a big sort of period for them to actually realize, and it's back to the irrational thought patterns. We're starting to slowly challenge that irrational thought patterns that, you know, you may have knowledge, you may have, but remember, we're dealing with animals, we're dealing with, you know, so, you know, just because you're skillful or knowledgeable and you can name off, problem gamblers take great kudos in the fact that they can remember the last 25 Derby winners. Look, you're in the office, you're in GA, your relationship may be broke, you've lost your property. It's time for us to actually start being real.
Are slot machines programmed to pay out, say, once every 3 hours, or does it work any other way? I'm not saying you should know this, but...
Well, I do know. Yes, they are programmed. They're programmed to win. And they're programmed to win, and the payout is usually supposed to be 15% or whatever of the time or whatever like that. But you see, the way they do that, and the way people... The way the lottery does it, the way they... is the near miss. You know, it's a gambler's fallacy. You know, the near miss, because it's so close. Oh my God, I just missed another bar there. I don't know about slot machines or poker machines. But I nearly got a royal flush there. I just missed the boy one or whatever like that. That's how these machines draw you in. But just mentally, cognitively, you sort of say, well, I'm that close. barely missed the left. But that's how they keep you perpetuate. That's how they keep you there at the machine, that near miss. And look, the lottery does it in a sort of a way, in a way with, you know, even scratch cards, you know, 2 10,000s, and you're looking at it to see how many zeros, and you say, geez, that was close, I must be closer. But you're no more closer. That's a gambler's fallacy, that you're no more closer to getting the 10,000 than you were previously. Do you know? And that's what it is. And these machines are programmed to do the same. And believe it or not, there's a type of hierarchy around all addictions. I mean, the alcoholic will look down on the heroin user and say, you know, he's worse than I am. Believe it or not, the gambler will look down on the alcoholic and the heroin user and say, well, I'm not, you know, I, at least I don't take a substance in. And even just at the gambling stage, the gambler that likes the horse racing and goes horse racing will look down on the gambler that plays the poker machine. So I'm just saying there is a hierarchy of stuff going on, and sort of say, you know, that, you know, it wouldn't be unusual for a guy that spends his days in the bookie saying, how would you play a poker machine? It's rigged. You know, and stuff, and they are, but you have to realise that the horse racing and stuff like that, it's not a way of making money. It's an expensive pastime. It's, you know, and if you're happy enough to sort of indulge yourself every so often, and like a lot of people do, so be it. And I'm not here saying gambling's terrible, but what I am here is sort of saying is, look, just notice, you know, if you're spending more time gambling, if you're thinking about gambling, if you're spending more finances, maybe family finances on gambling, you know, and in this financial climb, there's no one has a huge amount of excess. Well, very, very few have a huge amount of excess cash. And so, you know, if we have, it wouldn't be unusual for me to say, you know, an individual, the sort of logic that I work late all week and I work Saturday morning, and that's my gambling money for Saturday afternoon. And that would be quite acceptable to gamblers. But, you know, my job is to sort of say, do you know what, you're working late all week, you're not getting home until God knows what time, maybe getting up Saturday morning, maybe there's other ways, and that's what we do, we challenge cognitions, irrational cognitions like that.
Thank you, Brian Lynch. And that's it for another edition. You have been listening to 103.2 Dublin City FM. My name is Ger Coonahan. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Brian. See you all again next week. Good luck and slán.